Our next case for argument this morning is Joes against Ashcroft. Mr. Irukara.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court.
You can raise the podium where there's a switch in the lower right. Well, that's the switch to lower it. You'll probably feel more comfortable that way.
Thanks, Your Honor. I appreciate that. May it please the court. Babatunde Irukara for petitioner Olajimoke Ajose. Your Honor, this is an appeal from a final administrative order of the Board of Immigration Appeals regarding Ms. Ajose's ability to remain in the United States or not. And there are three issues, really, that are presented for review here. First one is whether Ms. Ajose was able to establish that there's been sufficient change in her circumstance to the level that would create her to have an opportunity to have the IJ review his decision regarding her asylum application. Second is whether the Board of Immigration Appeals abused its discretion when it decided not to reopen the case. And third is whether the Board of Immigration Appeals is, by its conduct and by the suggestions in its final order, creating a standard that is neither supported by case law or regulation for notice of changes of address. And that's a pretty serious issue. And I'll take them one at a time. Ms. Ajose had applied for asylum in the United States. An integral part of her claim was a religious persecution and that she was subjected to female genital mutilation. It wasn't such a serious part of her claim that she was subjected to it because it had occurred to her. However, subsequent to when she filed her asylum application and when the case was heard, she delivered a child in the United States who was a girl. And she was concerned about the fact that her daughter may become subjected to female genital mutilation. But that wasn't even the biggest part of her concern. Of course, she objected to it. She was a member of a particular social group. A bigger concern was what will happen to her based on objection to that procedure. And that somewhat substantially changes what the decision, the controlling decision of this court is on that issue. This is not a derivative asylum claim, Your Honor. The claim, to some extent, is about what would happen to her based on the fact that she had expressed opposition to the practice and had attempted to protect her child from that happening to her. Next, the Board of Immigration Appeals abused its discretion when it did not reopen this case on the ground that there were no exceptional circumstances when counsel did not receive its decision. There's extensive affidavit by counsel, by counsel's assistant, and by Ms. Ajose, showing that at no point did they become aware that a decision had been made by the Board of Immigration. There's extensive material that is attached to the motion to reopen, showing that counsel moved office. The new lease started March 1. Counsel was allowed to move into the new location between February 15 and February 22nd. This order was issued on February 13. It never arrived in counsel's office. And there's background information to show that this was not an isolated or peculiar situation. And that is attached to the motion to reopen. Exactly with the same organization, the Board of Immigration Appeals. They issued a briefing schedule and sent out transcripts to the Office of Counsel on February 11, specifically 2 days before the order was issued in Ajose's case. It never arrived at counsel's office. Counsel spent the next 1 or 2 months trying to resolve that with the Board of Immigration Appeals. It was ultimately resolved by them sending it to counsel's new address. There's enough material to show that that happened. Now, the government says that, well, counsel should have notified the BIA of any change of address. How would counsel have done that on February 13, February 15, or February 16, at any time before counsel actually moved his office? Apart from that, counsel had made extensive arrangement for his mail to be forwarded. And he did receive several mails, including from other INS organizations and the Board of Immigration Appeals itself. Now, this is definitely an exception.
Is there any evidence that the order was returned as undeliverable?
Your Honor, the Board of Immigration says that there is no such evidence. However, there was no such evidence also in the other case that was sent out to counsel. And there is affidavit material to show that, indeed, there were several things that in the transitionary period were misplaced in the mail by both counsel and his former partner. There's no question about that. The final issue is whether the Board of Immigration is creating a new standard by saying, by articulating a specific provision about a manner and time where counsel must have notified the Board of Immigration about a change of address. Counsel reasonably did that. By the time they received the brief in another case from counsel, which was barely 2 to 3 weeks after this relocation occurred, the Board of Immigration still sent their notice regarding that brief to counsel's old address. And the brief, which is part of the record, clearly shows that counsel was sending that brief from a different address entirely. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Blair O'Connor, representing the Attorney General on this matter. Your Honors, both the Immigration and Nationality Act and its implementing regulations require that motions to reopen a final order of removal be filed within 90 days of the date of entry of the removal order. Because petitioner filed her motion to reopen nearly 8 months after the date of entry of the final removal order, and because she has failed to establish that any of the limited exceptions to the filing deadline apply in this case, the government asks that the Board's decision denying her motion is untimely be affirmed and that the petition for review be denied. Now, first, it's important to note that petitioner's motion was not a motion that sought to rescind an in absentia removal order, and therefore, it was not even subject to an exception based on either exceptional circumstances or lack of notice. Rather, the only exceptions of the 90-day filing deadline that were available to petitioner in her case, which is a regular motion to reopen, not one that sought to rescind an in absentia removal order, were either, number one, a jointly filed motion that was agreed to by all the parties, and we know that that was not the case in this case because the Department of Homeland Security opposed the motion, or two, a motion to reopen to apply or reapply for asylum based on changed country circumstances or conditions in the country of nationality. I will address that exception in a minute, Your Honors. In this case, petitioner was never ordered removed in absentia. She had a full asylum hearing before an immigration judge who ultimately denied her claim. She then appealed to the board, which considered her case on the merits and issued a decision adopting and affirming the immigration judge's decision. Therefore, neither an exceptional circumstances exception or a lack of notice exception was applicable in this case. Now, even assuming without conceding that she could have claimed a lack of notice exception, she has failed to demonstrate how she was entitled to such an exception under the facts of this case. Here, the board properly served a copy of its decision on the last address of record for petitioner's counsel. There is no evidence in this record that petitioner's counsel filed the required change of address prior to the board's entry of its final removal order on February 13, 2003. Therefore, the board properly served petitioner's counsel at his address of record. Now, petitioner baldly speculates that her counsel never received a copy of the board's decision based on some deficiencies with the Postal Service. However, as this court has recognized in NOAC versus INS, alleged deficiencies in mailing that are no fault of the board simply do not excuse a failure to timely file a motion to reopen. The record in this case suggests that petitioner's counsel was not as attentive as he could have been in this case. For example, after receiving an extension to file a brief in her case before the board, he failed to do so, and then petitioner's counsel apparently made no inquiries with the board for nearly a year and 3 months following the deadline of the due date for his brief, even though he alleges that he was having trouble receiving board decisions in other cases. No inquiries were made until she came into his office in September of 2003. Such circumstances simply do not excuse petitioner's failure to file a timely motion to reopen in this case. Furthermore, even assuming without conceding that petitioner's counsel did in fact never receive a copy of the board's order, this fact still would not excuse her failure to file a timely motion to reopen, because under the express language of the statute, the 90-day time limit starts to run from the date of entry of the final removal order, not from the date that notice of the removal order was either sent or received. As this court has noted in Nowak versus INS, and as the Supreme Court has noted in Stone versus INS, jurisdictional statutes, such as the ones in this case, must be construed with strict fidelity to their terms and are not subject to equitable tolling. Now, this court has recognized that the board does have the authority to reissue its decisions in order to give an alien additional time in which to seek judicial review. That was the Firmanji versus Ashcroft case. But the court noted in that decision that the board is never required to reissue its decision in cases where notice is alleged to have miscarried. Here, the board in no way abused its considerable discretion in refusing to reissue its decision in this case, because it had probably served a copy of the decision on the last address of record for petitioner's counsel. Therefore, because petitioner's motion to reopen missed the filing deadline by nearly 5 months, and she has not satisfied any of the exceptions to the filing deadline, her motion is properly dismissed as untimely. Now, with respect to the second exception I referenced, and that is a motion to reopen to apply or reapply for changed country circumstances or conditions. In this case, contrary to the suggestion that petitioner asserted in the opening brief, the evidence of her daughter was not previously unavailable. Her daughter was born February 2001. The asylum hearing was conducted January 2003. In fact, she even mentioned to the immigration judge during the hearing that she had a daughter. Therefore, this was not did not satisfy the exception, because it was not evidence that was previously unavailable. And secondly, as we noted in the supplemental authority and the decision of Oforji versus Ashcroft, this court has held that an alien parent who has no legal standing to remain in the United States may not establish a derivative asylum claim based on a potential hardship to the alien's United States citizen child. Here, petitioner has already been circumcised. She does not have a well-founded fear of being subject to circumcision again if she's returned to Nigeria. And because her daughter is a United States citizen, the daughter is not, asylum is not available to the daughter. Therefore, she cannot claim a derivative claim. So barring any further questions, we would ask this court that because the motion to reopen was nearly 5 months untimely and was not subject to any of the limited exceptions to the filing deadline, that the petition for review be denied.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, counsel?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, there is no mechanism for making inquiries from the BIA. The BIA, by its very nature, takes anything from several months to several years to make a decision. So, there is no lack of diligence if counsel does not contact the BIA even after several months to find out if the BIA is going to be making a decision in a case or not. Secondly, the government inaccurately states the position of reviews of motion to reopen before the BIA. It appears that the government has made the requirements for a review of a decision of the immigration judge what happens before the Board of Immigration Appeal. They're totally different. Next, there is no lack of diligence in notifying the BIA of counsel's new address. This was an order entered on February 13. Counsel had not changed her address at that time. This is an unfortunate circumstance that occurred in a transitionary period, and the BIA recognized that in one situation, applying to the same counsel, applying to the same office, in the same window time frame. Why would they not recognize it in a second time frame? Now, and I'll address the issues that counsel raised last in their new authorities. First, the Oforji case is distinguished from this case. This is not a derivative asylum claim. Exactly correct that the daughter had been delivered before the decision of the immigration judge, but the real fear of what could happen to her based on having that daughter had only started occurring. Her affidavit, which is Exhibit 2 to the motion to reopen, and in the record, pages 23 to 28, paragraphs 8, 12, 15, and 18 are pretty clear about what her subjective fear was as far as what would happen to her, not her daughter. Now, counsel rightly admits that this court has recognized in the past that the board could reissue their decision. And frankly, this motion to reopen was really more of maybe a new date, redate the decision, reissue the decision, so that this petitioner would have whatever relief would have been available to her available. Finally, the government wrongly cites to 8 CFR 1003 sub 38 sub small e, which requires that an alien notify the Board of Immigration Appeals or the Immigration Court, the EOIR, of any change of address within 5 days. There's no such requirement on counsel. The clear reading, the clear language of that provision is, within 5 working days of any change of address, an alien must provide written notice of the change of address on form EOIR 33 to the board. Where a party is represented, the representative should also provide to the board written notice of any change in the representative's business mailing address. There's no form required for this. The form of appearance that we routinely use before the Board of Immigration Appeals requires counsel to put an address and check a box if it's a new address, so that counsel's address will be updated throughout the system. Obviously, shortly after counsel relocated, the Board of Immigration Appeals received material from counsel's office showing his new address. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.